Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time. All right, well, we're all here, so let's roll out the Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and wait a second, I said Friday, didn't I?
Start spreading the news.
Well, Friday means Schomburg Stu is here. How are you, Stu?
All right, it's always good to hear the man singing.
So, all right, if you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something popping up over there sometime, hopefully tomorrow morning. I won't have the same issues I did on Wednesday. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could give that a like while you're over there, we'd greatly appreciate it. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is, no surprise there, it's at Sports Time Radio. Sadly, Stu isn't on Twitter quite yet, but I am out there at Burke Time, and as always, feel free to send me anything you want me to tell Stu, and I will gladly pass it along to him. And I did notice right off the bat, Stu, I believe this happened yesterday, but No, it looks like it was February 15th. I didn't realize this, but somebody broke your world record for planking. A 62-year-old man by the name of George Hood, who just happens to be from Naperville, Illinois, planked for 8 hours, 15 minutes, and 15 seconds to set a Guinness World Record. So unfortunately, it looks like you lost out on your record there.
Yeah, well, I used to plank in my younger days, but no longer. So I have to succeed to the new fellow in Naperville, which isn't too far from Schaumburg, of course. So congratulations.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have planked quite a few times, but that's normally after a few drinks. So, I saw this gentleman interviewed. He's a former Marine, and obviously I was just trying to do it to add a little humor to the start of the podcast, but I don't know if I could plank for 8 minutes, let alone 8 hours. So pretty impressive feat there, and I don't quite know what makes somebody do this, but I believe the fact that I see it says here that he had attached a catheter to his body would probably be the number one reason I would have zero interest in trying to break this record. So
yeah, I can't blame you for that. But he sounds like a tough guy.
Oh, but yeah, there you go. Yeah, he's a hell of a lot tougher than I am at 62, and you know, I'm sure he'll hold that record for quite a while, because God, I don't know why anybody would want to try to break it. But you know, that's just how it goes. So
yeah, there are some bizarre world records out there, aren't there? I mean, some really obscure world records.
I am dying for you to give me an explanation for this, because I saw this story just a little while ago, and I am completely baffled by it. The Phillies announced today that Andrew McCutchen is going to begin the year on the injured list. All right. Now, he's recovering from a torn ACL. All right. All sounds like legitimate things. No big deal. I don't have an issue with this. The only problem I have with this, Stu, is the fact that he tore this ACL after playing just 59 games. So we're talking May or June or something to that effect. Again, and I'm going to go into my own personal catalog here, because I have had 5 knee surgeries, and it never took me, let me get his last play date here that he actually played. He played June 3rd. So you're looking at 10 months, maybe more, for a professional athlete with the best training facilities and staff to recover from an injury that when I got, they gave me 4 freaking weeks off of work to get better, and I'm not a professional athlete. What goes on with these jerk-offs that we drag this stuff out so long? You can't tell me it's taken him 10 or 11 months to recover from this.
Yeah, well, he's not a youngster, but that being said, it seems to me that the recovery time is way too long.
So yeah, I was looking through the article here looking for Derrick Rose quotes, like he wanted to be able to play with his kids and, you know, walk into the boardroom and stuff after his career is over, but unfortunately I didn't find any of those. You know, this is just literally unfathomable to me. I mean, okay, he's 33 years old, so he's not young, but he's not old. Obviously,
right.
He's in fantastic shape being a professional, athlete. And I just, the fact that we're talking 10 or 11 months to recover from an ACL is just beyond my, I can't even fathom that. You know, I mean, it should be 2 months and he should be back.
Yeah, here's the thing, what I'm thinking about. I need your opinion on this. It seems to me it would take a basketball player a little bit longer to recover from an injury like an ACL than a baseball player. And what's your thought about that one?
Yeah, you would think with the cutting an NBA player has to do compared to a baseball player, obviously they do have some change of direction movements in baseball, but not like a basketball player. You have to make sure that obviously the entire amount of flexibility is there for, a basketball player. So I could see them taking a little longer. But, yeah, the sad part is I really like Andrew McCutchen. I actually have a, one of those goofy T-shirt jerseys of Andrew McCutchen. He's one of my favorite guys. I've liked him since he was back with the Pirates. And, yeah, the fact we're just sitting here, former MVP, looked like he had it kind of back together last year after a couple down years, and then he got hurt. And now this is just, ridiculous. I mean, I understand Chris Sale starting the year on the DL. He's got pneumonia. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
But this is, this is an injury that happened 10, 11 months ago.
The first question that comes to mind when I hear this, when you told me about this, is did he do his due diligence during the off season? The winter months, did he continue to try to rehab the ACL? Or did he start to slack off a little bit since spring training wasn't starting for quite a while and maybe he tapered off? Is that possible?
Yeah, obviously they're not going to put that in this article, but, I guess it's possible. But even like here they mentioned that There's no indication that there's cause for particular concern, and that they just say that he's being handled with some care, given that he's returning from such a significant injury. So it doesn't look like there's anything really wrong with him. It just looks like the team is being a little ridiculous.
Would they be as cautious with a player who was 25 as compared to someone who was in their 30s?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's from team to team. Obviously from the fantasy perspective, you could look for Jay Bruce to get a whole lot more at bats while McCutchen is out. Oddly, interesting enough, your buddy Matt Caesar is in camp with the Phillies, so this may give him an opportunity to make the opening day roster.
Is he there on a tryout basis or a minor league deal?
He's on that minor league deal with the invite to spring training that, all these guys get. So,
well, he certainly would be an adequate backup outfielder for them, but I'm not sure if he has a chance of making the team.
No, and, you know, even if he makes it, he'd probably only be there till McCutchen got healthy, you know, and then it would kind of be like, you know, okay, well, you know, you're headed back. So,
has he had, does McCutchen had any other serious injuries besides the ACL? And maybe that's why they're being super cautious. They're afraid that one injury would lead to another one.
No, this is the first one. You know, I believe when he was with the Giants for that short period of time, if I remember correctly, he had, or maybe it was when he went to the Yankees, he had a hamstring, but nothing, you know, nothing to the extent, you know, blowing out an ACL. So again, it's just baffling to me when because obviously, like I said, I apply it to my own experience, and, you know, like I said, hey, they said, here you go, you got 4 to 6 weeks. Okay, great. And this guy's got 10, 11 months.
So if he comes back in late May, early June, how long will it take for him to get into baseball shape?
Yeah, and, you know, that's the other thing. I mean, you wonder if they're setting him up to fail here. I mean, obviously, you know, they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to curtail his spring training activities now. You know, and you're going to have to get these other guys at bats. So whoever ends up with the spot, and, you know, it looks like they got a boatload of guys in there just besides Jay Bruce. I mean, some of the names you'll recognize: Josh Harrison, Neil Walker, Logan Forsythe, Ronald Torres is in camp with them. I believe Mikey Matuk was a former top prospect for, I want to say, the Tigers. So, you know, besides Matt Caesar, they have a boatload of these kind of, you know, wherewithal veterans, I guess you could call them, that never really got the chance to play every day except for Neil Walker there. So, you know, we'll see how that works out. But, you know, if you're going to put one of these guys in there, they're going to need the at-bats. And I, you know, going to instructional league isn't really going to help a player like McCutchen. I mean, he'll get the at-bats, but against our competition.
And what happens if one of these guys gets super hot during the regular season? Are they going to pull him out and put McCutchen in?
So, yeah, that's obvious. That's the other question.
Right. Yeah, it could be one of the same infamous Wally Pipp situations.
So, yeah, you know, that's, yeah, you know, and, you know, especially a guy like Jay Bruce, you know, if Jay Bruce gets hot, he's going to hit bombs. And so, you know, and I know, you know, you get the thing, well, he'll play against right-handed pitching. Well, obviously they're going to see the majority of right-handed pitching. So, you know, that would be a lot of at-bats for Jay Bruce and not very many at-bats for Andrew McCutchen. You know, and again, obviously they're not going to sit Bryce Harper. So,
well, we know that's
you know,
not gonna
you, happen. You know what, I want to see if I can get their, what other kind of outfield option they have here, what they're projected to do, if I can get it really quickly. If my, you know, of course my internet has to cooperate for that. So sometimes we have that problem. Let's see what they're listed here. Oh yeah. Well, right now they have it as Bryce Harper in right, Jay Bruce in left, and then Adam Halsey in center. You know, Halsey was a first-round pick, so they're looking at him as potentially, you know, a long-term guy. So, yeah, it would be interesting to see, you know, like you said, if a Jay Bruce gets rolling, what they'll do with, you know, a veteran like McCutchen, because he's not going to have a lot of trade value.
No, for sure not. And you have to wonder at this stage of his career, would he, if they inserted him into the lineup in June, say, for example, would he make a difference to possibly making a wild card, Phillies making a wild card team or not? I'm not so sure that he would have that much of an impact.
Well, you know, I think they're hoping on the fact that they played really well while he was healthy, and he really kind of became the catalyst. He was leading off for them, which was a little surprising. But, you know, he really kind of, you know, took to that spot and really helped the team out. And, you know, his injury was huge for them when it happened. So, you know, I think they would be hoping for a return to that where he became, you know, that top of the order guy where, you know, he got kind of got the whole team going. But, yeah, I just don't know, you know, sitting out
of hope
is going to help.
I don't think it's going to happen. They may wish that he comes right back in and starts out again like he did for the first 50, 60 games of last season. But I don't think that's happening. I think because of the fact that he's not coming in with any kind of training behind him. And how is he going to get ready so quickly?
Yeah. You know, and, you know, the sad part is, you know, this is a good Phillies team. Obviously, unfortunate for them, they're also in a very good division, probably the best division in baseball from top to bottom, with, of course, the exception of the Marlins. So, yeah, I don't know if, you know, you would think you would want your best lineup out there, and it almost seems like they're hindering themselves by not letting him start the season with them.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to help them out. And as you pointed out, it's a very competitive division. It's hard-pressed to see a runaway favorite, maybe Atlanta slightly, but you got Washington, you got the Mets, who a lot of experts are predicting them to really be in the fight for the Central, or for the AL, I'm sorry, the NL East title this year, even a contender, not just a second-place team. They seem that strong, barring injuries, of course. You know, the Mets always seem to run up a myriad amount of injuries before it's all said and done.
So, yeah, just kind of odd, one of those. You know, I was a little surprised to see as many people on the Mets bandwagon as there were. I actually picked them last year when we did our predictions. You know, I kind of thought with that pitching staff, they could really make some noise, and it ended up being the Nationals who used their pitching staff, obviously,
right,
to go all the way
right
to the World Series. So,
yeah, I would not be surprised to see them wind up in second place, I think at best. I know some of the experts are picking them to upset, to win the division in an upset, but I think I could see them winding up in second place, logically.
Yeah, you know, and then, you know, the Phillies made the big offseason add. You know, they brought in Zach Wheeler. They ended up he ended up picking them over the White Sox. You know, the tough part, it looks like, for Philadelphia is, you know, their closer is still out. You know, David Robertson had Tommy John surgery last year. So, you know, that's a full year plus now. What used to be an 11 to 12 month rehab, they've turned into 18 to 24 in some cases. When Zach Wheeler had it, he missed two full seasons. So, you know, they have a really good top three with Nola, Wheeler, and then Jake Arrieta as the third starter is a really solid guy there. But, you know, you're going to look at a bullpen that's going to have to rely on Hector Neris again, and I don't know. He's so up and down that I don't know if that will sell for them when it comes time.
Yeah, you need a consistent guy there, and the guy I think has talent, but I like he pointed out, he's not a consistent type of pitcher that you need in that everyday situation.
You know, and you know, I mean, who knows? Maybe this is the year he settles in and he finds his groove. You know, bullpens are so damn hit or miss. You know, one year a guy can be the worst reliever in the game, and then the next year he gets everybody out. So, you know, who knows how it's going to go, but, you know, you've got to kind of judge it on what he's done, and I'm not holding a lot of confidence that Hector Neris is going to be the best closer in baseball.
Right. So. And I often wondered about that, what you mentioned, by the way. That's quite an interesting subject to me. Some years a middle of the road can be lights out, and the next year he gets hammered. Why the lack of consistency with these guys? And that's why they go from team to team so frequently. And you wonder why they're not consistent from year to year. They can't sustain that excellence.
Yeah, you know, you could make a lot of money selling that to teams if you could figure it out. I just... You just don't know. I mean, you look and you look. I remember, oh boy, it was probably 3 or 4 years ago, the Indians had a lights out bullpen, and of course they won the Central, not a huge division, but I think they got beat by the Yankees in the playoffs. They brought the exact same people back in the bullpen. They didn't make any changes. And it went from being like the best bullpen in the American League to lower middle of the pack. So, you wonder in that off season, what happened to these guys? Did they forget how to pitch?
Yeah.
It's
very odd to me. And that's not unique to Cleveland, though. I mean, this happens to a lot of teams. More often than not, the lack of consistency in their relief staff. And you wonder what could cause that difference from year to year.
Yeah, and that's always the thing when, a team adds a really good setup guy. And you're like, oh, okay, this will be a fantastic add to their bullpen. He'll be the perfect guy to set up in front of, like the Dodgers did it last year. They signed Joe Kelly to set up in front of Kenley Jansen. And, God, Joe Kelly was terrible. After having a really good year with Boston, he turned around and for whatever reason couldn't repeat the same thing with the Dodgers. And it's just kind of like, okay, well, what's different that, we can't figure it out.
Yeah. Do you think it's more prevalent if a pitcher, a mid-level relief pitcher switches from one league to the other league? You think that could be a factor as compared to staying in the same league?
No, I don't think with relievers that's as big a kind of warning there, because you don't see them that much. With a starter, you're going to get, in a game, if he sticks around, you're going to get 3 at-bats against him. But that reliever, I mean, you may not even see him in a series. It may be, okay, he pitched this game, but then he didn't pitch the other 2 or 3, and then they didn't need him last next time you played him. We didn't see him. So I actually think it kind of plays into the reliever's favor because you don't have to run into him that much. But, it just for whatever odd reason, it seems to some guys just seem to struggle with it, and I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see who got signed where and how they do this year, but it's tough to put a bullpen together,
if
you've got a light close, the rest of the bullpen around them can stink.
Yeah, it's odd, but this has been going on for the last few years, and I just haven't been able to put my finger on why it's happening like that.
And I do wonder if the new rules now where the guy has to either finish the inning or face 3 batters, how that is going to kind of affect, what a team is going to, how the bullpens are going to go. So.
Yeah, it's not, no longer are we going to see the lefty-lefty matchup type thing. Now, if a guy comes in to get a left-handed batter out, what happens if the next 2 batters are right-handed? What are they going to? He's got to pitch to him, doesn't he? With the new rules.
Yeah, the way they have it set up now, that's the deal. You come into the game, and it's 3 hitters or finish the inning. So.
Right, and was this rule implemented simply to reduce the amount of time it takes to play a game?
Yeah, baseball's whole thing is they're trying to speed up the game. Unlike, you and I and Dan who can sit there and, watch a game for 3 or 4 hours and actually stay with it and know what's going on, these kids now, and I mean, I'm sure you've seen it just watching a game, they show a shot of the stands and everybody's on their phone. Nobody's even watching the game.
Yeah.
So they're trying to keep these guys with the short attention spans attached to the game involved. And to do that, it needs to be faster.
Yeah, I could see that. And I think we've pointed this out before, maybe in emails. It always annoys me when I see the panning around to the crowd during the game and no one's paying attention to the game. They're on their, as you said, they're on their phones, they're doing things, they're chatting with someone. That could be a very dangerous situation, too, if you're not paying attention when there's a foul ball coming into the stands.
One of the things that frustrates me is when I hear, like, a sports writer or a sportscaster complain about a fan being hit by a foul ball, because, unfortunately, most of the time these fans are hit, they weren't watching the game. You know, where if you, you know, like, I get it, if you're a little kid, you're going to run around and not pay attention, but when you're an adult, you're there to watch the damn game. Why are you on your phone?
Yeah, exactly.
I
question whether it's a very prudent idea to bring a kid into the ballpark who's 2 years old. I've seen babies at the ballpark, and that can turn into a very, very dangerous situation, but I don't know how you avoid it.
No, well, you know, like, I think, you know, like, if you're sitting in the upper deck, I don't have any problem with you bringing your kid as long as you're going to watch him and, you know, be vigilant. But when you get down in that lower bowl, and, I mean, you know, obviously they're going to take away some of this with the expanded netting. But, yeah, you get in those lower bowls of the stadium and, they hit some rockets at you. And it's like, hey, you've got to be, you know, super careful when you're – you know, it's nice to have those seats. Obviously, they're quite expensive. But, yeah, you get off the damn phone.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to – it's funny that you mentioned it. Of all the games I've been to, and, of course, I always call them box seats, where they did in the old days. But of all the games I've been to, I've only had one chance of catching a foul ball. And it was interesting. The ball bounced off a seat and right into the person in one row ahead of me. A little soft, little lazy pop-up. It slowed the ball down, and they grabbed the foul ball. That was the closest I've ever come to grabbing one in all the games I've seen over the years.
you've done much better than I have. I have never came anywhere close to getting a foul ball. So, you know. Now, Dan, on the other hand, you know, he had I think that was a batting practice home run, oddly enough, by Andrew McCutchen, and he didn't catch it. It ended up hitting his hands and falling off, and he got hurt from the ball, and Francisco Lindor ended up throwing him the baseball. So he did get the baseball. It just didn't quite go away.
I had a similar situation when I went to a White Sox game with a friend of mine many, many years ago, and we were in the top row of the bleachers, or one of the first row of the bleachers, a batting practice home run, and he reached over and tried to grab it. It bounced off his thumb, and that smarted. I was glad it wasn't me, because that can hurt.
Yeah, well, interestingly, a different sport, of course. In 1963... my father was sitting in the end zone in Wrigley Field, and I said end zone because it was a football game, when the Bears beat the Giants in the NFL, I think it was the championship, and one of the extra points landed in his lap, and he had so many people on him that they ended up ripping the football away from him, and he ended up not getting the ball.
That does happen. The fans go crazy, and I've seen that happen several times. Oh, by the way, talking about that, the final score of the game, Bears 14, Giants 10.
Yes. So
Y.A. Tittle was in the was the QB for the Giants for that game.
Yeah, somewhere in my mess of sports collectibles, I believe I still have the program he got at that game. Obviously, with all those guys piling on him, it's not in great condition either. But, you know, I did hang on to it just because. So, you know, just one of those things. But, yeah, that was about as close as he got. I mean, the ball literally landed on him. and there was just nothing he could do about it. There were, you know, as the story says, there were probably 100 guys who were, you know, ended up in the pile trying to get the football. So.
Yeah, that there have been a lot of fights at Wrigley Field for those foul balls that go out, or the home runs that go out to Waveland Avenue or Sheffield, and the fans get into a big scrum trying to grab that ball.
So, yeah, it's odd that, you know, you would fight over that, you know, especially for, you know, the weird part about it is, you know, okay, you're a collector, maybe you're trying to resell it. The problem becomes it's not authenticated. So basically all you're going to get is about what the ball cost and maybe a little more.
Yeah, there are some guys who make a living. Well, I don't like to make a living, but they seem to be at the ballpark every day waiting for those home runs to fly out of the ballpark so they can go after it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's nice that they get to go to all those games. I honestly think I would rather be watching the game than standing outside. But, you know, hey, to each their own, right?
Exactly.
But, yeah, just odd little tidbits that pop up when, you know, you end up getting into this kind of stuff. So we'll
One other thing. I have to mention one other thing. You're talking about the 1963 Bears winning the title. I still have the videotape that I took of when the Bears won the Super Bowl with 86. I think I may have looked at it maybe half the game once over those 35 years. But it's still sitting there.
Do you have
all my other old videotapes?
Do you have a VCR that you can actually play them on?
Yeah, I have one. I still have an old combo that I still have, an old DVD VCR combo. Boy, the VCRs became obsolete very quickly, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm a guy who's got a whole bunch of his wrestling matches on tape, so you can tell what good that does me. So. You know, just one of those things. So all the good stuff. I did see a kind of another. I don't know even how to describe these sometimes, but I thought this was kind of humorous. They were talking about, you know, there was a lot of conversation between the Red Sox and the Padres trying to work out a trade to send Will Myers to the Red Sox. You know, the problem basically kind of ended up being is the Red Sox wanted Cal Quantrill added into the deal so they could plug him right into their major league rotation, and they would be taking on a lot of money for Myers.
Yeah.
And they just couldn't get it done. And oddly, it seems like there's a lot of people who jumped in trying to figure out if the Red Sox are really interested in making a deal and who they could add. And humorously, one of the names that came up was Jason Hayward. Now, he's on this list with Albert Pujols, Justin Upton, Chris Davis, and Matt Carpenter. So basically, it's a bunch of overpaid guys that for some reason this guy wants to dump on the Red Sox.
Yeah, and Hayward is probably the youngest of all those guys, I would think. And the question is if the Cubs really would consider trading him, who would they get in return? A prospect or two?
I'm sure they would get Jackie Bradley back in return, would be my guess. But, you know, it's kind of funny because the Red Sox have been talking all along about how they want to cut payroll. Well, this wouldn't help them cut payroll because all these guys are starting to – you know, at least, like, Carpenter makes the least at $18.5 million. You know, and, there's multiple years on all these deals. It's like, why would they make any of these trades? So.
Have they considered doing this just to generate some fan interest because of the adverse things that they've been experiencing recently?
Yeah, you know, but I do wonder. I mean, you know, you look at this team, and you know, you do have to wonder. Even by getting rid of Mookie Betts, they should probably still contend for a wild card. You know, obviously they're going to need Chris Sale to get over the flu and come back. You know, but I mean, that's not anything that should linger. You know, past once he recovers. But, you know, I mean, they've got a solid lineup. And, you know, while their rotation isn't fantastic, you know, it doesn't stink. You know, Eduardo Rodriguez won 18 games last year for them, or it might have been 19. You know, yeah. if Nathan Eovaldi can stay healthy, he's relatively productive. You throw Sale in there, you know, and obviously the tough part is going to be filling out those last two spots. You know, it's not terrible, and Brandon Workman looked like a guy who could actually get outs at the end of the game for him last year, but we talked about bullpen, so we'll have to see if that carries over. But, yeah, I don't know why they wouldn't contend for a wild card spot. I mean, they're not as probably as good as the Yankees or maybe even the Rays, but they're wild card worthy, aren't they?
I would think, though, it would be between them and Tampa. I'm trying to think if they were going to actually pass Tampa in the standings. And if they went up third place, it would be hard to see them getting into a wild card spot. So they would have to pass Tampa.
You know,
they have to wind up in second place, I think, before they would have a legitimate shot of getting into the wild card.
But, I mean, you know, you look at their everyday lineup, and, you know, it's, you know, you've got at the top, it looks like they're going to lead off Andrew Benintendi this year. Rafael Devers had a fantastic year last year. You know, Xander Bogaerts is probably one of the more underrated shortstops in the game. You know, J.D. Martinez is a 40-homer guy. You know, they brought back Mitch Moreland, who not only is really good defensively, but manages to get big hits here and there. You know, Michael Chavez had a solid rookie year. And then you got, you know, somewhere Alex Verdugo is going to fit into there, along with Jackie Bradley and whoever ends up catching, be it Christian Vasquez, or I know they have they brought Kevin Pawecki in, and then they signed Jonathan Lucroy. So one of them is going to end up catching. But, you know, I mean, day-to-day, it's not a bad everyday lineup.
You remember
Petrola
predicted for them? Do you think they were predicted 86 wins or better than that? It's hard to say.
I don't know what they ended up having for the Red Sox. I do remember they were in third place, but I don't remember their win total.
Yeah, I would think maybe 86 might be reasonable, a reasonable projection, but I don't have all the analytics available that Petcola does.
So, but yeah, I just, you know, because like, I'm kind of, you know, on the fence with them. I mean, obviously, I don't think they're going to win the division, you know, unless it would have to be one of those things where, well, of course, if the Yankees continue to get injured like they have, maybe, but I don't see that happening, but, you know, it looks like a lineup that's going to produce runs. And, you know, if you can just get enough pitching to keep you in the game, you know, they might get a 86, 88, you know, type of win total that will get them in the wild card race.
Yeah, and I know that initially the Yankees are the overwhelming favorite to win probably not only the East but the American League pennant. But now I'm concerned with all those injuries. Are they that much of a prohibitive favorite anymore?
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard anybody kind of say, you know, they're not yet. I don't think anybody's ready to kind of get on that bandwagon. You know, obviously I think a lot will have to do with the fact of if James Paxton comes back as soon as everybody thinks he's going to, you know, that would make a big difference. But I mean, you know, even without him, they're still carrying two really good starters and then one solid veteran starter. You know, obviously Garrett Cole, and then they've got Tanaka, and Hop is still solid as a third guy. It's just get Paxton back and healthy that's, you know, going to kind of, I think,
if.
Be
– That's a big if. That's a big if. And, but I would think they were probably projected to win 100 games this year, but I would say that should be reduced maybe to the mid-90s now after these injuries that they've had.
Well, and don't forget, you know, they'll get Domingo Germán back, and he's not hurt. He's just riding out a suspension. So, you know, as long as he's working out and getting ready, you know, they'll be able to get him back right away. I think he's got 63 games left, I saw. So, you know, they'll get him back and be able to plug him right back in the rotation and as well. And he won, I think it was 18 games before he got suspended last year. So,
yeah.
You know, that'll be a big boost when they, you know, when they manage to get him back.
Well, don't forget, he won't be in game shape. I mean, he could be working out.
But he can work out.
But,
you know, he'll be able to work out and, you know, pitch against minor leaguers and stuff. So he'll at least be ready to give them, you know, five innings, six innings a game when he comes right back. So
yeah, he comes back with the same success he had before. That would certainly help them.
Yeah, or even, you know, close to that. You know, I mean, you know, I'm sure they'd be happy if he won 12 teams instead of 18. But
yeah, you wonder about some
you know,
of these
but
guys. There's still these suspensions that take place. Although I think the amount of suspensions have been greatly reduced the last few years. But you wonder about these guys, how stupid they could be with all the stringent testing going on now, and they still wind up with a suspension like he got.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of times, you know, I honestly think, you know, some of these guys, and especially the guys, you know, like he's from the Dominican. I'm not exactly quite sure where. You know, a lot of times I think, and I don't want to use ignorant because I don't think that's correct, but I almost believe that maybe they're not up to date and they end up taking something thinking it's not legal or it is legal and it's not. Or, you know, in some cases, you know, they have the Barry Bonds excuse where the trainer told them to use it and it turned out to be illegal.
Right, yeah. Well, that was a great Barry Bonds excuse. I'm wondering if most of these players now have sports management teams behind them to check these things out to make sure they don't occur.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if, you know, all of them do. You know, some of these guys are still kind of breaking in and may not have the finances to have that kind of a group behind them. You know, obviously the bigger players do. You know, they've probably got a whole staff of guys going, okay, you can't have this, you can't have that. But, you know, a guy like Herman wouldn't, you know, he hasn't had the kind of career where he could do something like that.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but yeah, it'll be kind of interesting to see how things shake out for the Yankees. Cause you know, last year they got a lot of production out of guys we weren't expecting. I mean, you know, we knew DJ LeMahieu could hit. We didn't know he was going to hit like he hit last year. But, you know, they're counting on guys now, like, you know, with Aaron Hicks out, Brett Gardner is going to play a lot. He's going to be 37. You know, Luke Voit, you know, they've got Miguel Andujar back from injury. Gio Urshela hit for the first time in his career. You know, and then they're going to fill the outfield role with Stanton being hurt again. It looks like he's not going to be ready for opening day. You know, it looks like it's going to be Mike Tauchman and Clint Frazier. You know, Frazier has kind of proven he can hit in the minors. He's never had a chance to do it in the majors, but, you know, I don't know if or how Tauchman will do as an everyday guy.
Yeah. You think it'll be important for the Yankees to get off to a good start in April and May to prove that, hey, we can overcome these injuries and we can still be the dominant team in the division and in the league?
Yeah, I definitely think they need to, you know, and especially those guys who hit last year need to show that it wasn't a fluke. You know, they need to be able to kind of get out there and be like, oh, yeah, look, you know, we did, you know, I did this last year and it wasn't, you know, because of a juiced baseball or whatever else was going on. So, you know, that I think that's going to be really important for, you know, a lot of these guys. You know, I mean, especially, you know, like I mentioned, Urshela, you know, he had 21 homers and hit 314. You know, Tauchman in just 87 games had 13 homers and hit 277. So, you know, you're going to need similar production out of these guys. And, you know, getting Andujar back will help because he's a legitimate 30-plus homer guy. So, you know, but, yeah, I think they've got to get off to a really good start. And, you know, obviously Gerrit Cole has got to, you know, show that he was worth all that money.
That's right. Do you see a reduction in the amount of home runs this season, upcoming season? overall?
I think so. Maybe not a lot because, you know, home runs draw attention and they bring fans in. But I don't think baseball can kind of get away with the BS they pulled last year where, you know, it was like, oh, well, you know, the balls had lower seams. No, I think you've got to kind of go back to closer to a normal baseball than you used last year.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. But I don't think we'll see a reduction in the amount of strikeouts for the players this year.
No, those will go up. They're after all those home runs last year, there's no doubt strikeouts go up because everybody's going to be thinking they're going to hit home runs. So, you know, no doubt there at all.
Yeah, I always say that it looks like the day of the situational hitter is gone, which is really a shame.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, it is, you know, and that's another thing, you know, baseball complains about, you know, the younger generation not wanting to watch the game. You know, the problem becomes when you get all these strikeouts, the ball isn't put in play, so nothing's happening.
Right.
You know, why do you want to watch that? I mean, there's times I'll sit there and go, why am I watching this? Nothing's going on. You know, these guys haven't touched the baseball. And I get it. You know, a lot of times it's good pitching. But in most cases, sadly, it's just terrible approaches at the plate.
Yeah, as I always pointed out on many occasions, it's the fact that the players don't concede something to the pitcher when they have two strikes on them. As Ted Williams,
right.
As I've always pointed out, Ted Williams always said that. He would concede something to the pitcher when the pitcher had two strikes on him. And how'd that work out for him?
Well, that's what I knew analytics and sabermetrics and everything was a farce when they did I can't remember what they called it. I think it was hard hit rate or something with the baseball. And the guy who came out the worst at hitting the ball the hardest was Tony Gwynn, who only had 3,000 how many hits and is a Hall of Famer. But according to sabermetrics, he's not a good player. Immediately right there, you should throw that all out because it's clear that it doesn't work.
No. It's a complete failure. I don't even look at sabermetrics anymore. I mean, it just a complete joke.
Well, you know, that was like 2 years ago. Albert Pujols ranked as the worst player in baseball sabermetrically. Would you, if your favorite team was playing, do you want to face Pujols with a man on maybe second or third in the game on the line? You know, I know he's not the player he was in St. Louis, but he's still driven in quite a few runs in his career. And I believe he's over 500 homers now. And, you know, he's still probably got a career 280 or 290 average. I don't think I want to face that guy. How's he the worst player in baseball?
It doesn't make sense to me. And, granted, he is on the downside of his career. He's not the player he was before. But tell me he's not still dangerous at the plate.
Yeah, you know, and that's one of those things where I don't understand where or how they put this together. That, you know, they come up with this stuff. I mean, you're plugging a bunch of equations into a computer and it spits it out. Well, how do you know these are the equations to use? You know, why is it these equations? You know, because obviously strikeouts don't factor in. You know, and then I heard a guy try to explain that RBIs are lucky. You're just lucky to drive in a run. Well, no, you've got to get a hit, and there has to be a man in front of you. I don't know how much luck that is. But,
So you tell me that Abreu drove in, what, about 120 runs last year was lucky most of the time when he drove in those runs. They're just being in the right place at the right time.
And batting average is a farce. You know, okay, well, you hit 320, great, it doesn't matter. Batting average doesn't mean anything. Boy, I would love to have a lineup of guys hitting 320 and see how that team did.
Yeah. I think you'd have a winning team without any question. So I think these new ideas and rules and sabermetrics and everything else and what it's putting Bo in play is not right. It's just not the way it's supposed to be. And I've seen winning teams. You've seen winning teams supersede these rules and are very successful doing it.
You know, and I'm sure in some cases it's helpful. You know, there probably are some stats down there. I've never went through all of them because I just get frustrated. But, you know, there's probably some stuff that helps you out. But, you know, I'm still looking at that left-handed guy who maybe as a pinch hitter hits 400 against righties that I want up there in a situation, even if sabermetrics tells me he's not supposed to be. I'll take a shot with that guy just because he's done it in his career.
Sure.
So, you know, I don't – that, you know, that's one of those things that just kind of baffles me. I mean, I don't care what his swing plane or launch angle or any of that stuff is. I'm looking at a guy who's hitting freaking 400 late in the game against some of the toughest pitchers in baseball. Well, some of the toughest right-handed pitchers in baseball. Give me that guy in the box, and let's see what happens.
Yeah, but when you pointed something out to me that's very interesting. It's one of the more annoying things now. When someone hits a home run – regular season game, they'll show you the launch angle and all kind of crazy stats. And okay, great. I don't care. He hit the home run. That's good.
You know, the thing that always makes me laugh about that is they have to put the exit velocity up there, and I'm like,
yeah.
I don't care how hard he hit it. It got into the stands. It's a home run.
Right. That's all it is. I mean, forget about the launch angle.
Right.
Miles per hour. And who cares? I mean, do people really care about that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of nerds at home on their computer typing all that in going, oh, yeah, hey, great, look at that. We can use this to factor in blah, blah, blah. So, you know. All right, well, I don't want to forget here while we're rolling along. I want to get your picks in here. And sadly, or surprisingly, I guess more than sadly, you actually had an 0 for last week, which hasn't happened to you since we started doing this. So
yeah,
a little bit of a
shock.
Yeah, not good for the upcoming baseball, I think.
I'm
so you felt
that Fury dominated Wilder so much. I really thought he was going to lose
good.
That fight. That was one of my big surprise. That was a big surprise to me.
And me both. So we're gonna jump to tomorrow, and we're gonna start with the NBA. The Bulls have a later afternoon game tomorrow. It's a 4 p.m. start. They're taking on another bad team, though. They're in New York to face the Knicks. You got the Bulls getting a win?
It's a tough one. Boy, I have to think about that one. I'll pick New York.
Oh, okay. A little surprise there. I thought you were going to jump on the Bulls bandwagon there, and then we'll give you another kind of tough one here. We're going to go to the Cubs spring training game tomorrow, and you give me the total number of strikeouts their pitchers are going to have, and just like last week, we'll give you plus or minus 2 on it because. Obviously, to land on the exact number like that, well, it's possible, but it's a little difficult. So give me a total for whatever the game ends up being. If they play 5 or 6 or 9 or 10 or whatever it is, what's the total number of strikeouts Cub pitchers are going to get, again, plus or minus 2?
I will go with 8.
All right. So we will lock all that in, and hopefully you will have a better week this week, and we will see how that goes. So,
I'm due for a better week.
Well, you know, like you said, I was as shocked as you were that Fury was so much better than Wilder, and you know, I understand it was the fact that he wore that 40 pounds of ring gear to the while he was walking down that cost him.
That was really a joke, wasn't it? When he said that, I had a chuckle when I saw that remark that he made.
You know, I myself have never worn here, so, you know, I wouldn't know about that. The most I ever wore was a towel.
That's it. That's it. He wore it like the old Moose Cholak who came in with the moose heads on his head when he wrestled.
Yeah. I wish I had a moose head. I'd have worn that thing everywhere. But I did see that, I don't know if you caught this one, but Robin Lerner is going to make his debut tonight in goal for the Las Vegas Golden Knights after the big trade from the Blackhawks. So we'll have to kind of check up. He's at home. They're playing Buffalo. So it looks like a game that Las Vegas can get a win in. So we'll have to see how Lerner does with his new team.
Well, but truth be told, Lerner seemed to regress the last couple of weeks with the Blackhawks. He certainly wasn't playing his best. And maybe he'll be rejuvenated playing with a better team now.
Yeah, you've got to think, you know, moving over to a team like this, and I'm interested to know how they're going to handle their goalie situation, because obviously they have Marc-Andre Fleury. So I don't know if they're going to, you know, split time or how it's going to work out. But, I mean, he's going from a, you know, the Blackhawks are last in the Central. The Golden Knights are first in the Pacific. So you got to think that's going to pump them up. They are only fourth in points, but they're first in the Pacific.
Right.
So.
Oh, I did want to ask you one question now. That, you know, the Blackhawks have a new goalie, Subban. Is he related to PK Subban? He is related. Okay. I wasn't sure. I thought he might be.
I believe, you know, he's been a backup for a few years, kind of bouncing around the league. I'm trying to remember where because I remember him playing for like Nashville or Carolina, I think, something like that. I could be off there, but it seems familiar.
If the Blackhawks are going to get Crawford, if they're going to extend Crawford again for next season.
Well, it's either Crawford or, I don't know, do they have high hopes for that Colin? Is it Dealey who's playing for their top minor league club?
Yeah, well, that's a known quantity, though, for the when they bring him up to the NHL. It's a big difference. And Crawford had one bad game recently, but he looked very solid last in the game against Tampa. He made some nice saves.
Yeah, because I don't believe Subban is a number one goalie. So.
No. But they should put him in the nets for a couple of games. You got to give him a couple of shots at least.
Oh yeah, I'm sure he'll get his. He'll get his chances. I mean, especially in the situation the Blackhawks are in. I mean, you've got to see what you've got in the guy, because I'm sure you're going to have to make a decision on him. You know, if you're going to keep him around or out. So.
Yeah, that was a shocking win, by the way, last night for the Blackhawks, trailing 1-0 after two and scoring 5 goals in the third period. Of course, one of them was an empty net goal.
Yeah, well, hey, they still count, right?
That's it.
You know, yeah, it was. I thought when it got 2-0, with as good as, you know, Tampa Bay has played this year, I thought, oh, this is over. You know, they're not going to come back from this. But, yeah, no, they now that they come back, they came roaring back. It was like, oh, hello.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they got Tampa at a good time, because Tampa has not been playing a good brand of hockey the last few weeks. So that helped, I'm sure.
And, you know, you figure the Blackhawks were due. I heard that Tampa was 4-2 in the last 16 games they played against the Blackhawks at home. So you figured they were due.
Yeah.
Don't forget the podcast is available for you to listen to whenever you want.